This ceremony was officiated by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan Roshi is the abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at cmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Good morning, everybody. And good morning to all of you. Joining us from your homes or wherever you are, and particularly to family and friends of Pat and Scrap, who are here this morning to receive the Bodhisattva precepts. This is really an important, whenever we take vows, really all that we do is done with and within the Sangha. And particularly taking vows is important to be done publicly and in the presence of the Sangha, who are so as you are both bearing witness, and for those of you who may be new to Buddhism or to the vows of the precepts, this is an opportunity to learn about them and reflect on them. For those of you who have received Jikai within our lineage, within our Sangha, this is a time to renew your vows. And in that way, this receiving of the precept ceremony is, while focused on Scrap and Pat, will be a time for all of us to turn towards these essential teachings and reflect on them within our own lives as well. The Buddha said in his original teachings and throughout his life that the sila, which for us in our tradition is the precepts, and samadhi, working with our distracted and restless mind, and prajna, gaining insight into the true nature of things, are the three essential aspects of the Buddhist path. And that with the moral teachings, because the Buddha in his enlightenment realized that we are fundamentally moral beings, that we try to avoid pain and try to move towards what is affirming of life, not always very well, that every action that arises out of our desires and intentions creates karma, causes consequence. And those consequences are, for the most part, either beneficial or not in terms of our own lives and the lives of others. And so the Buddha realized that we live in a profoundly, as human beings, we live in a profoundly moral world in which not having an influence is not an option. And so being alive, being related to all things, how do we do that? And so we can reflect on these precepts and practice them from the perspective of how we relate to ourselves, our mind, our emotions, our actions, how we relate to each other, how we relate to all animate beings, the earth, how we relate to inanimate beings. So the precepts are all pointing to our mutual relatedness, how we are dependent upon each other to be, to exist, to come into being, and to either create a life that is continuing to cause more confusion and anger and greed, or is liberating. And so the Buddha, in realizing that we live within a moral universe, another way of saying that is that we actually have enormous power and influence. We don't often think of our own individual lives that way, because we think about perhaps people being on a large stage and sort of people who've had tremendous influence in the world, but each of us in our own way has much more influence and power than we think. And not being aware of that, we cannot always be good hosts of that power, caretakers of that power. These precepts are based in the enlightenment of selflessness, that all things are fundamentally without any inherent quality, characteristics, self-existence, good or bad. As that is our basis, then when we come forth in the world of things and people and situations, how do we practice that selflessness, that non-fixedness, that freedom that is not bound in any way within this world of definitions and boundaries? And so we, in studying and practicing these precepts, we, at a certain point in training, students have the choice to request to take these vows. We all study them as by virtue of being practicing students and practitioners, because we encounter these teachings. To take vows is a very personal and public action. It's making a commitment. Dogen speaks of an inner shift, an inner kind of conversion that takes place that brings us into alignment, that we want to bring ourselves into alignment with these teachings. And in this way, we realize that they help us to live a much happier life than we might otherwise, a much lighter and less complicated life than we might otherwise. It actually frees us to use all of our vital energies and everything to put them into full employ of our own liberation and the alleviation of suffering. Whereas when we don't live in accord with these teachings, whether we're Buddhist or not, we can too often spend an enormous amount of our time and energy into running from, avoiding, or repairing the harm that we and others create, which from a Buddhist perspective is understood, but is a great waste of this precious life. So to begin, Scrap and Pat will do three sets of bows. First, to the Buddha. So this is recognizing our original teacher and the beginning of the Buddhist path and Buddha Dharma. And so it is an expression of understanding that where we come from and how we have arrived at this place. And also an expression of understanding that in bowing to the Buddha, we're bowing to our own Buddha mind, our enlightened mind. And then next, they'll do bows to their parents, in the direction of their parents. If their parents were here, then they would bow directly to them. And if their parents are deceased, then they'll bow in the direction in which they were buried or their ashes were scattered. And this is a recognition of their ancestral, their family, blood lineage. And these three sets of bows are recognizing that we all arrive here through an intricate set of dependent relationships, spiritual relationships, blood, familiar relationships, and as a part of that, to also recognize our ancestry of this place, the Munsee, the Mohican, Lenape people who inhabited this area for thousands and thousands of years before they were forced off. And so to also recognize as practitioners on this mountain, this monastery, that they too are part of our ancestral lineage. And then the last set of vows will be to the Kaishi, the precepts teacher, who today is myself. And these precepts are received, can be requested to be received after a student has been in formal training for at least a couple of years. So a person would have been drawn to the Dharma in this Sangha, in this teaching center, would, at their own choosing, ask to enter into a more formal relationship, more conscious relationship in terms of being a practitioner. And then after having done that and living that and affirming, confirming that this is their path, they might then request to receive the precepts. And so both Scrap and Pat have been practicing for a number of years leading up to this point. So next we'll do the invocation of the three treasures, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And Buddha here is the historical person, Shakyamuni Buddha. Buddha being an awakened one. And so we invoke the Buddha in his historical being, as well as all the Buddhas, all enlightened beings who have come down through the ages to us here. We invoke the Dharma, which are the teachings of the Buddha and all enlightened beings, and also are all things, because all things possess what we call Buddha nature, the nature itself of enlightenment, of emptiness and non-duality, and the treasure of the Sangha, which can be this gathering this morning. All of you who are joining us today are Sangha, practicing Sangha, all Buddhists throughout the world, and all beings, because all beings, whether they know it or not, possess Buddha nature. And so we'll invoke the three treasures. Everyone please gassho. Be one with the Buddha in the 10 directions. Be one with the Dharma in the 10 directions. Be one with the Sangha in the 10 directions. Be one with our original teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha. Be one with the great compassionate Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. Be one with the great wise Samantabhadra Bodhisattva. Be one with the great wise Manjushri Bodhisattva. Be one with Koso Joyo Daiosho. Be one with Taiso Josoi Daiosho. Be one with the successive great ancestors. Be one with the Buddha in the 10 directions. Be one with the Dharma in the 10 directions. Be one with the Sangha in the 10 directions. Be one with our original teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha. Be one with the great compassionate Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. Be one with the great wise Samantabhadra Bodhisattva. Be one with the great wise Manjushri Bodhisattva. Be one with Kosho Joyo Daiosho. Be one with Taiso Josai Daiosho. Be one with the successive great ancestors. Be one with the Buddha in the 10 directions. Be one with the Dharma in the 10 directions. Be one with the Sangha in the 10 directions. Be one with our original teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha. Be one with the great compassionate Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. Be one with the great wise Samantabhadra Bodhisattva. Be one with the great wise Manjushri Bodhisattva. Be one with Koso Joyo Daiosho. Be one with Taiso Josai Daiosho. Be one with the successive great ancestors. Gokhan, could you do me a favor and shut this small window? It's just blowing cold air on my head. Next, we'll do the Gatha of Atonement. So having invoked all the Buddhas and enlightened ones into this space to be present for this ceremony, we do the Gatha of Atonement. So recognizing that we all come here, you come here this morning to receive vows with our life and all of our life's karma within us. And much of that karma is good and has been beneficial, and thus you are here. And some of it has not been good and beneficial, and thus you are here. And so in the Gatha of Atonement, we turn towards that. Very often we don't want to do that. But in Buddhism, what we don't face, we give more power to. And so in turning towards our karma, particularly the more burdensome karma that we have created, we allow ourselves, we empower ourselves to begin to study it, examine it, understand it, essentially in its nature, and to be able to free ourselves of it. And so to take responsibility is to both recognize what is true, and it's also to empower ourselves to be able to free ourselves. We recognize that karma is created through intentional thoughts, words, and actions that arise out of, when it's negative karma, arises out of greed, out of anger, out of delusion, out of pride, out of jealousy. And as we recognize that, it helps us to study and understand how we create karma, and we can begin to shift that into more awakened directions. And so this is a practice. We do it here as a way to prepare ourselves, in a sense, yourselves, to take the precepts, to take these vows, but it is also an ongoing practice for us, an important practice. And so we'll do this in call and response. So I'll chant each line, and then everyone is invited to respond, as well as those of you at home, if you would like to be invited to and join us. So everyone please gassho. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old.
All evil karma ever committed by me since of old.
On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of my body, mouth, and thought. Now I atone for it all. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of my body, mouth, and thought. Now I atone for it all. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of my body, mouth, and thought. Now I atone for it all. Next is Shasui, which is a spurging using the clear mountain water that comes from the belly of this mountain. And dousing the head crown, which is a way of expressing, it's not a purification ritual, but more expressing the Buddha mind, the enlightened mind that exists within each one of us. Now, as you prepare to begin taking the vows, I want to just say that in taking vows, a vow is a result of needs, is most powerful when it follows a period of careful reflection, consideration, examination, sometimes struggle, wrestling to both understand what is important and what stands in between us and what's important. What seems in our lives to get in the way of those things that are most essential? What do we ourselves put in the way between ourselves and what is most essential? And so vows are, having gone through such a careful reflection, are an articulation to bring into definition what we want our lives to be about, how we want to, as Zadarushi used to speak of, combusting our lives, how we want to bring ourselves forward each day. And understanding the nature of karma, that means in every waking moment, in our thoughts, words, and actions, in our intentions, our desires. And most importantly, because these are bodhisattva precepts, in our relationships with others. How do we bring forth compassion? How do we alleviate suffering? And vows are a living thing. We take them each day. We renew our vows. We should be renewing our vows each day. Consciously, clearly, not implicitly, because we have taken them once and therefore by implication we are living those vows. No. We do it explicitly. We give it voice, our own voice. We put it into words. And so this morning is a formal expression of that very thing. But for each of us, really, as practitioners, if these vows are important to us, we should be doing that each day. And in that way, they become more and more integrated, more and more alive. They are living things. We see what happens in our lives, in others' lives, and in our world when we do not live by vows. When we are swept along by the currents and the forces that abound. And so these vows, in a way, are really being very clear about the importance of our own personal lives, our individual lives, and how they are not just personal and individual by any means. And so when we strengthen and live out of and renew our own vows, we are doing that not just for ourselves, but for everyone. And so we'll begin the first of the 16 precepts with the three treasures. So we, having invoked them into the space this morning, now we will take refuge. Take refuge means, as Dogen Zenji spoke of it, to unreservedly rely upon the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha as your very body and mind, as the totality of your spiritual life and community, and as the whole world. So again, we'll do this in call and response, and everyone is invited to take refuge. Okay, everyone please gassho. I take refuge in the Buddha.
I take refuge in the Dharma.
I take refuge in the Sangha.
I take refuge in the Buddha, the incomparably honored one.
I take refuge in the Dharma, honorable for its purity.
I take refuge in the Sangha, honorable for its harmony.
I have taken refuge in the Buddha.
I have taken refuge in the Dharma.
I have taken refuge in the Sangha.
I take refuge in the Buddha.
I take refuge in the Dharma.
I take refuge in the Sangha.
I take refuge in the Buddha, the incomparably honored one.
I take refuge in the Dharma, honorable for its purity.
I take refuge in the Sangha, honorable for its harmony.
I have taken refuge in the Buddha.
I have taken refuge in the Dharma.
I have taken refuge in the Sangha.
I take refuge in the Buddha.
I take refuge in the Dharma.
I take refuge in the Sangha.
I take refuge in the Buddha, the incomparably honored one.
I take refuge in the Dharma, honorable for its purity.
I take refuge in the Dharma, honorable for its purity. I take refuge in the Sangha, honorable for its harmony.
I have taken refuge in the Buddha.
I have taken refuge in the Dharma.
I have taken refuge in the Sangha.
Now, next are the three pure precepts. Buddhism is often sort of described its essence as not creating harm, doing all that's good, and training and realizing the mind. And then, in a way, that's just an expression of the pure precepts: to not create evil, to practice good, and to actualize good for others. To do this, to live these seemingly simple moral precepts, requires, we will see, if we have not already, we will see that it requires to study deeply, examine, and understand the nature of our mind. These precepts are not rules. They don't exist on paper or outside of ourselves. They are our very body and mind. They're an expression of our essential nature. They're an expression of the way things are both seen and experienced and lived from an enlightened view. So we really shouldn't think of them as rules that we're sort of taking on, sort of trying to put on like a suit of clothes, but rather that they're already our basic wisdom. They're just articulating, expressing it, so pointing us in the direction that we need to be attending. And so the first of the pure precepts is to not create evil. Evil, all that is harmful, all that is binding, that is destructive in the world, small and large, only comes into being when we create it, in our minds. It doesn't just exist in the world. There is nothing that just exists in the world. And so to not create evil, whenever we see anything that is harmful, we know that it is the creation of people, human beings. We are doing this. Doing this, what if we cease? What if we do not? And this precept is but pointing to what we can do with our minds and our bodies, but we don't have to. Do not create evil. This is the abiding place of all Buddhas. This is the very source of all Buddhas. Do not create evil. Will you maintain this?
I vow to not create evil. And
the next pure precept is to practice good. And I really love this precept because it seems so simple and beguiling. What does it mean to practice good? For whom? Where? When? Towards what? It just is practicing good. Because good, too, does not just exist in the world. We can say that we have, and Buddhism believes, that we have a basic impulse towards what is good and away from what is harmful. Right? No one has to tell you to pull your hand out of a candle flame and to put it on ice. Right? We know this. This is our basic wisdom. So it's not that we are inherently good, though. It's not that good exists within us as some substantial fixed thing, but we do have it as our inclination. And so to practice good means to recognize it's not just enough to cease from harm, but we actually have to bring forth, to bring into manifestation all that is good. Where? When? At all times, in all places. Whether someone is present or not, whether someone is immediately receiving it or not, just to be of a heart and a mind that is generous in practicing good. This is the Dharma of Samyak Sambodhi. This is the way of all beings. Practice good. Will you maintain this?
I vow to practice good.
And then the third pure precept, to ensure that the good that we're practicing has beneficial results, effects on others, sentient beings, people, creatures. We actualize good for others. And in that way, we realize practicing good and ceasing from harm alone are not enough, that we need to actualize good for others. I was just thinking of how when I was in high school, I worked for several years in an animal hospital, and I worked with one veterinarian who was a wonderful, incredible bodhisattva towards animals, towards people. And so to actualize good for others brings that into very direct understanding, that we are taking vows to alleviate suffering for others, and that is people, first and foremost, because we are the ones who do so much of the harm. And when we do that for ourselves and others, then every other creature benefits. Every other animate and inanimate being benefits from that. This is to transcend the profane and to be beyond the holy, to liberate oneself and others. Actualize good for others. Will you maintain this?
I vow to actualize good for others.
Now, briefly, and to just to give us, to help convey how these precepts are not just fixed rules, in our lineage, in the Zen tradition, and then further in our lineage, there are various ways that we understand these precepts. Just relax for a minute. So we understand them from the perspective of what we call the literal understanding, so that we practice these precepts as they are stated. We practice not killing, not stealing, not being deceptive, not clouding the mind, not speaking of others' errors and faults. And so that's just our basic way of practicing the precepts and being in the world within these vows. But if we only look at them that way, then they have the potential to become fixed. And they will not be able to bring forth compassion in moments that in which to actually follow them that strictly would actually cause harm. Because sometimes we do need to speak of others' errors and faults. Sometimes we may need to take life in order to bring forth compassion, if that life is just knowing unending and unrepairable or unmitigating suffering. Sometimes to speak not all the truth is a way of being compassionate. That is a basis in compassion and reverence for life, and it also has to, we have to be very clear about our intention. And so we can see easily how that could be misused, misapplied, as a way to justify something that is actually self-centered. But use that as a justification for following the precept. But that's a very important perspective. And then there's the Bodhidharma One Mind precept, understanding that all of these teachings, all of these actions are based in selflessness, in emptiness. And so from that perspective, to even give rise to the thought of someone taking the life from something, of this person stealing an object from another, is already based within the notion of self and other as distinct, self-existing, autonomous, separate, estranged entities. So even from that perspective, even to give rise to the thought, goes against the nature of the precepts. Within our own lineage, too, there's the understanding of time, place, position, degree, that what makes an action skillful and compassionate is not, it's not taking place within a void, it's taking place at a particular time, a time of day, a time of within one's relationship, a time in history. It's taking place within a place. And that place creates a context in which that action may be more or less skillful. We have positions with each other, positions of roles, positions of socialized identity, male and female, being non-binary, of racial distinctions, different levels that take place within a community, where there's hierarchy, within an organization, where there are levels of authority. And so our actions are always taking place within different levels of position. And then degree, what level of action is needed? How do we actually be skillful? In Buddhism, this is supremely important. There is no compassion. But compassion is not just the application of a rule. How do we try and bring forth an action that is actually going to be received in a way that is beneficial? There is no absolute action that is absolute good, because there is no thing that has that nature. And so that's just a very briefly to give a sense of the depth and breadth of these teachings and why we need to have been practicing for a while to be ready to receive them. And then we need to keep practicing for the rest of our lives so that we can continue to examine and understand the profound nature of these teachings. So now we bring the pure precepts into the gray precepts. What are the things, we can look at it this way, what are the things that human beings do within ourselves, towards ourselves, and within relationship to people and situations and things that cause the most binding karma, that cause the most suffering? Now, you know, we could create an almost endless list of things that we do. But these precepts, the great precepts, point to those things that are most egregious, like taking a life, or that through accumulation can have very profound karma consequences because they happen over and over and over again. And so in that way, these precepts really bring our attention to things that we want to be very keenly aware of. Okay, so the first of the great precepts is to affirm life, to not kill. All life is life. Our natural inclination is to love life. Every creature exists within its own intricate web of causes and conditions and appears in the world through a profound wonder of mutual arising. And the basic nature of all things appearing is non-harming, to not harm. So then why is there so much anger and hatred and violence in our world? Dogen says that no creature falls short of its own completeness. Wherever we stand, we cover the ground upon which we stand. We are all endowed with virtue. We all have our place within the universe. To take life away steals away the opportunity for that being to fulfill their own potential. And so this, first and foremost, is applied towards human beings. Because as human beings, we know that we suffer. We have the opportunity to raise bodhicitta, to do wondrous things with our life, small and large, to be a benefit. And so to not kill is to not harbor the mind of killing. To affirm life is to cultivate the life of affirming, the mind of affirming life. Dogen says, life is non-killing. The seed of Buddha grows continuously. Maintain the wisdom life of Buddha and do not kill life. Vow to affirm life, do not kill. Will you maintain this? I vow to affirm life, I vow not kill. The second great precept is to be giving, to not steal. Giving is life. To be generous, magnanimous, is our nature. When that's not coming forth, that can be because there are external conditions that are dampening that basic impulse. It will always be because there are internal conditions. When we don't practice giving, we create a state where we stand in isolation. We become caught in a self-created separateness. When we practice giving, our mutual and essential codependence becomes clear and is self-healing. Giving is self-healing. This precept is also clearly about not stealing, about not taking things that do not belong to us. And it's about cultivating a non-grasping mind, to live a life that is based in non-attachment towards things, towards titles, towards power, towards positions, to cultivate a mind of generosity, a mind that is easily satisfied. Do not seek things from outside that you can only find within yourself. The mind and externals are just thus. The gate of liberation is open. Be giving, do not steal. Will you maintain this?
I vow to be giving, I will not steal.
The next precept is to honor the whole person, to not misuse sexuality. Desire is present within all the suffering in the world. Desire is also present in bodhicitta, the great aspiration to alleviate all suffering. Desire is a force. Sexual desire is a powerful force. It can destroy love. It can create love. It can create deep wounds. It can bring forth profound healing. How do we use it, this force, whether we're in a sexual relationship or not? Right, all life has sexual energy, has sexual forces. How do we use them? How do we not be used by them? How do we apply them as bodhisattvas, as practitioners, in our intimate relationships, in our relationships with others, in our relationship with ourself? To honor the whole person is to understand that no person is an idea, is a projection, is a desire, that people are not there for our use. The three wheels, body, mouth, and mind, greed, anger, and delusion, are pure and clean. Nothing is desired. Go the same way as the Buddha. Vow to honor the whole person, to not misuse sexuality. Will you maintain this? You know, one way of reflecting on these precepts is just to be aware of them as we move through our lives in the world, as we bear witness to the many machinations of our world, and see that within every place of suffering, we will see how these precepts are present in terms of not being practiced. And the more greatly they are not being practiced, the greater the harm will be. As well as in every place where there are good things happening, where people are helping each other and helping our world, we will see how they've been brought forward. So they're not just in the domain of Buddhist practitioners, but as Buddhist practitioners, we study them directly. The next precept is to manifest truth, to not lie. When we open the Dharma eye, we see that all things are true, that nothing exists in a state of deception. Even deception itself, when we see it clearly, reveals itself. Deception itself does not self-deceiving in its nature. The way, this way, our way, the way of the Eightfold Path, is a path of seeing through all things that appear false, so that we can live in natural harmony with all things. And an important part of this precept, all of them, and this one in particular, is to have the courage to not be afraid, to not be afraid of truthfulness. And we might think that that's not a problem. Look closer. And we will see moments where we are afraid of what is true. We see that in our zazen, with the truth of silence, the truth of stillness, the truth of facing something that we may not want to face. And so as practitioners, the courage then is to turn towards, because we realize that is the only path forward. That is the only path towards happiness and equanimity. To live without deception is to live without regret. Milarepa said the reward is to live and die without regret, to live lightly with a straightforward mind and heart. The Dharma wheel unceasingly turns, and there is neither excess nor incompleteness, Dogen says. Sweet dew permeates the universe. Gain the essence and realize the truth. vow to manifest truth and not lie. Will you maintain this?
I vow to manifest truth. I will not lie.
The next precept is to proceed clearly, do not cloud the mind. So this traditionally relates to any kind of intoxicant substance that would cloud our natural, bright Buddha mind. We can also think of it as anything that we use to dim that brightness, to distract us away from our own natural clarity. Your original ever-present mind, the mind of suchness, is bright and clear. It is miraculous in its awareness. It is miraculous as awareness. Practice and practicing these precepts helps you realize that Buddha mind. And then more and more we see that all things are radiant and vital. When it's hidden, this naturally clear, bright mind, then the world itself appears dim and dull. Then it makes sense. We can understand why we turn towards all kinds of things to avoid that, to cover it up more, to bring a sort of superficial sense of aliveness or excitement. What is easy becomes more difficult when the mind becomes not clear. What is difficult can easily become overwhelming. And what we might be seeking to escape, we cannot escape. Because it is not anywhere else. And so this precept more and more helps us to understand that. And as we encounter that bright, clear mind, right, it becomes its own inspiration, its own motivation. The mind is the originally pure and clear Buddha mind. Do not let it become cloudy. Do not let it be defiled. Vow to proceed clearly. Do not cloud the mind. We maintain this.
I vow to proceed clearly, I will not cloud the mind.
The next precept is to see the perfection, do not speak of others' errors and faults. Dada Roshi said that mistakes are called learning. For a practitioner, all of our faults, our errors, as well as those of others, are our practice. How do we see them? What are we seeing? How do we use our mind that sees things in differentiation? How do we work with the mind that seems to impulsively and reactively discriminate? And to study our own karma helps us to understand the karma of others. And that naturally brings forth compassion. So then the more naturally we care for others, the more naturally we want them to be well, to succeed, to flourish. When we fall into the negative side of this precept, we create others, otherness, people who are not us. And that's the heart of all suffering, the heart of all divisiveness, the heart of all oppression. And when it's necessary to speak of others' errors and faults, to do that out of compassion, to have no joy, to not enjoy speaking of others' errors and faults, but to do it only for their well-being. In the midst of the Buddha Dharma, we are the same way, the same Dharma, the same realization, the same practice. Do not speak of others' errors and faults, do not destroy the way. Vow to see the perfection, do not speak of others' errors and faults. Will you maintain this?
I vow to see the perfection. I will not speak of others' errors and faults.
The next precept is to realize self and other as one, to not elevate the self and blame others. The sense of self is a self-creation arising from a self-clinging mind. But in every moment, there is only this single moment of birth and death. There is no one to build up. There is no one to bring down. There is no person to defend or criticize. Sometimes for the sake of compassion, when it's necessary to defend or criticize, we should do so only to alleviate suffering, to bring forth joy. When there's no self-clinging, then we're no longer carried away by praise or brought down by blame. Each person is complete. Each person is complete, fundamentally. Nothing exists in another that we cannot find in ourselves if we look carefully. This is to profoundly trust in yourself and to profoundly trust in others. Buddhas and ancestors realized the absolute emptiness and realized the whole earth. When the great body is manifested, there's neither inside nor outside. When the Dharma body is manifested, there's not a square inch of earth upon which to stand. That's our self-nature. Vow to realize self and other is one. Do not elevate the self and blame others. We maintain this.
I vow to realize self and other as one. I will not elevate self and blame others.
Now, an earlier precept, the second precept, was about not stealing, not taking what doesn't belong to us. This precept, give generously, do not be withholding, is about our not offering what we do have to give, our stinginess. Giving is life. Life is giving. We always have something to offer. And Buddhism recognizes that no matter the small nature of what we give or how grand it might be, it's the mind of giving that is most important. That's really the gift. The object, in a sense, becomes the vehicle for the mind, the heart that is giving. To give generously frees us from the story, the deception of never enough. We see that it's better to live simply and deeply than to be burdened by what we treasure too much. And now more and more we can enjoy what we have without fear of loss because we realize it does not belong to us. One phrase, one verse, 10,000 forms, 100 grasses, one Dharma, one realization, all Buddhas, all ancestors. These are just a few of the things that we have to offer. Dogen says, since the beginning there never has been anything to withhold. Vow to give generously. Do not be withholding. Will you maintain this?
I vow to give generously. I will not be withholding.
The ninth precept is to actualize harmony, to not be angry. So greed, anger, and delusion, these last three precepts are considered the three poisons, some of the strongest forces in the human world that create harm. Anger only arises within us, the Buddha taught, when the past seeds of anger are already there. It doesn't just appear. It is not something that anyone can give to us or can create for us. It arises in the mind. It might arise under very difficult circumstances. But in arising, once it comes into our cognition, it becomes our responsibility. Anger is like a burning fire. It can bring the house down. If it's used without self-clinging, though, it can be like thunder that calls people to attention, that brings forth a compassionate response. Again, like desire, it's a force. How do we use it? To live within anger, our own anger, our own long-burning anger, is like a slow-burning illness. And so the life of the Bodhisattva is really a life that takes liberation seriously. And in moments where we see that we're on the precipice of choosing to continue our own suffering or the suffering of others, rather than to actually relieve ourselves, work towards releasing that, we choose the latter. And that is where our faith is. that we can do that. It is not regressing. It is not advancing. It is not real. It is not unreal. There is an illuminated cloud ocean. There's an ornamented cloud ocean. And here Dogen is pointing to the fact that we cannot deny that anger exists. Its nature is empty. But when it arises, if we deny that it exists, if we don't practice anger from within the anger, then we're not practicing this precept. And so in a very real sense, learning how to be angry within our anger, a moment of anger, and within this precept is very powerful. It's what this precept is pointing to. Vow to actualize harmony, to not, do not be angry. Will you maintain this? The Mahayana perspective, realizing that things have no fixed, inherent, intrinsic quality, then opens us up to the whole world of things being what they appear to be and being what else they are. And in that way, the bodhisattva can use things in different ways because they are not fixed in nature. The last of the precepts is to experience the intimacy of things, to not defile the three treasures. So having begun invoking the three treasures, taking refuge in the three treasures, now to take this precept of not defiling the three treasures. The Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha are your own body and mind. They're the heart essence of all beings, Buddhist and non-Buddhist. They're what brings these precepts into the house of Buddha Dharma, into the Eightfold Path, into the mind of Nirvana. When we turn against these three treasures, we separate ourselves from them. It's like turning against our own home, against our own mind. To take refuge in, to practice, realize the three treasures as your own body and mind is the Bodhisattva path. And as I often say, when our practice is wavering, we should look into and towards these three treasures. We will find distance. We will find confusion. We will find something that stands between. Living the Dharma with the whole body and mind is the heart of wisdom and compassion. All virtues return to the ocean of reality. You should not comment on them. Just practice them. Realize them and actualize them. Vow to experience the intimacy of things. Do not defile the three treasures. Will you maintain this?
I vow to experience the intimacy of things. I will not defile the three treasures.
These 16 precepts, the three treasures, the three pure precepts, and the 10 grave precepts, have been handed down by Shakyamuni Buddha generation after generation to my teacher, to me, and now to you. Will you maintain them well?
I will.
Will you maintain them well?
I will.
Will you really maintain them well?
I will.
Three bows. So for those of you who are new, you may have noticed the repetition of things three times. And that's a way of sealing them. Buddha's robe. Bow. The blood lineage, list of the ancestors. which also includes, you pick that, which also includes the list of women ancestors that are also part of our lineage, our greater lineage. Mountains and Rivers Order. This is to certify the Scrap Wren, having fulfilled the training requirements of Zen Mountain Monastery in this order, has on this 9th day of May, 2021, received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, the lineage chart, the Raksu, and has been given the Dharma name Kyuko. Seated bow from right there, just right where you are. Okay. The list of the ancestors. Mountains and Rivers Order. This is to certify that Pat Carnahan, having fulfilled the training requirements of the Mountains and Rivers Order in Zen Mountain Monastery, has on this 9th day of May, 2021, received the 16 Bodhisattva precepts, the lineage chart, the Raksu, and has been given the Dharma name Shosen. That's fine. That's good. To bring forth the words of Dada Roshi. When the true eye opens, everything is realized as one. When the Dharma eye opens, one is realized as everything. When the true eye functions, it clears away all discriminating thoughts and allows us to see the pure Dharmakaya, the body of reality, the absolute unity of the universe. When the Dharma eye functions, it creates a clarity that allows us to realize that nothing in this great universe is hidden. Everything is just as it is. The true eye is the eye of wisdom, which is like the diamond sword of Manjushri, cutting through all of our illusions. The Dharma eye is the eye of compassion, the boundless love of Samantabhadra, working for the alleviation of all beings' suffering. Everyone has these two eyes, as does the Buddha, as do you. When we realize the Buddha mind, we see for ourselves that self-nature and Buddha nature are not two, but one. This is Shobogenzo, the treasury of the true Dharma eye. And now the Jisha will lead Kyuko and Shosen in bows, Chahai bows, around the Zendo so that everyone can return their bow and congratulate them, welcome them into the family of Bodhisattvas. And those of you at home are invited to return a bow as they pass you. Now you'll do three bows. Everyone, please, Gassho. When sentient beings receive the Sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the Great Enlightenment. Truly, they are the children of the Buddha. When sentient beings receive the Sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the Great Enlightenment. Truly, they are the children of the Buddha. When sentient beings receive the Sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the Great Enlightenment. Truly, they are the children of the Buddha. Now, before we finish up, let me say a few words about your names. So these are your Buddhist religious names. We use Chinese characters and Japanese pronunciation, sort of recognizing both of those strands of our lineage. So Kyuko, Kyu means enduring, long. We can say that a path is long because it challenges the traveler. Sometimes it seems too difficult and we hope for an end in sight. Or we can say that a path is long because in traveling it, we realize we will never reach its end. We realize that without beginning and end, now we're free of hope and excitement. We're free of birth and death. There is only the way. It reaches everywhere, and at every step is complete. Ko means peace, ease, happiness. It also has a meaning that points to the way, a path. When there is only the way, vast and wide, free and unhindered, this is the great peace. Nothing to oppose, nothing to go against. Here, all self-centered striving has been seen through. Self and others are now liberated from their fixed natures. Appearing and disappearing, coming and going, these are just the everyday, every moment appearances of everyday life. When someone agrees, there's no need for elation. When someone disagrees, there's no need for sadness. Things are just as they are. This is neither short nor long, and so we can say it is enduring. It is complete. It is at ease with itself. Kyuko. Enduring peace is your practice, it's your nature. And Pat, Shosen, so you've lived a long life dedicated to seeking, to the religious life. Sho means that which is holy, sacred, divine. Sacredness is that which is worthy of great respect, of reverence, of veneration. But what is so worthy? What is it that is so worthy? What is sacredness? When we realize that things are whole and complete, clear and unencumbered in and of themselves, we're beginning to see the nature of sacredness, that Earth's many creations, all of them are endowed with a fundamentally religious and spiritual significance. Why are these sacred? When we come into contact with sacredness, it helps us remember. It helps us see something beyond the surface. It brings us to the essential, what Dada Roshi spoke of as the heart of being. All things are endowed with this original nature, complete, clear, and unencumbered, as are you. Sen is river. And so Shosen is a sacred river. A river is used often in Buddhist teachings. It is never the same. It is never different. It flows without stopping on its path, returning to the great ocean. There are small rivers and there are mighty rivers. All are complete. All have the same nature of water, of motion, of change. A river can be a way of describing how we create deep, deep ruts of habitual thinking, speaking, acting, our reactivity, But a river can also describe how we practice freely, clear of any distraction. Even when a river eddies, that's only a momentary thing. Eventually, it will find its way. I read recently, just the other day, that because the Hudson River is a tidal river, moving in both directions as the tide ebbs and flows, that a stick thrown into the Hudson River in Albany can take months to reach the ocean. But it does. When we understand sacredness, how long it takes is no longer the most important thing. Sacred river is the inexorable path to enlightenment. It's the complete actualization of the enlightened mind. And when we encounter sacred river, deep humility arises. When we are in the presence of the sacred, a natural response is deep humility. Shosen, sacred river. I remember when I received Jukai many years ago. Afterwards, I was standing outside and I thought, what did I just do? I realized that I was in the midst of something much larger than I understood, than I knew. And it was a little frightening. I thought, am I ready? Do I really understand what I've just stepped into? But it was too late. Good for that. Good for that. The fact is when we take a leap, we are ready, and in a sense, we're not ready, because we haven't done it yet. And so this is the beginning of the continuing of your practice, and also the beginning of something new. And I pray that you spend the rest of your lives enlivening yourselves and the lives of others by understanding what has happened today. You have entered into the profound implications of living a life dedicated to awakening and manifesting true compassion. These teachings are not rules, and this no rule is neither something rigid and doctrinal or moralistic. And so we should always be aware of the tendency towards righteousness, but nor are they a relativistic presentation of morality. They're very clear. They're not ambiguous. We may not always understand them, but that's just our lack of understanding at that moment. They have been given to you today, as they have been all throughout the generations between teachers and students. And today, in the presence of the Sangha, you have made these vows, committing yourself to the life of a bodhisattva. So now you are a living link in this wisdom tradition of dignity, of selfless compassion. And with these vows, I hope that your practice in your life, I hope that you more and more understand how your life has changed, and that it will continue to unfold as your own spiritual path unfolds. May these precepts illuminate your life and the lives of others. May your life go well.
Thanks for listening. Did you know that Zen Mountain Monastery is live streaming all Dharma talks and daily Zazen during the coronavirus quarantine? Visit our website to learn about all the online programs being offered at this time. Just go to zmm.org and click on the link at the very top of the page, or scroll down and click on Retreats.